Jodur.
Roots, a 24-hour radio broadcast marathon on Palestinian ecology and solidarity.
يبث أيام 29 و 30 11 من الساعة 11 صباحا وحتى الساعة 11 مساء بتوقيت فلسطين.
Listen live on radio EE.net, radio Alhala and spatialradio.live.
جذور عمل إذاعي منتج بالتعاون مع راديو EE.net,
Berset University, راديو الحارة
وسبيشال راديو CSM لندن وديسارمينج ديزاين في معهد سامبرغ.
Good evening, you're back with spatialradio.live in London. So this evening we have Omar's come to join us. Welcome. And since mid-October, Omar's actually been hosting his own event every Sunday, an impromptu gathering of the minds titled The Living Room, sharing tea, coffee and conversation. We don't have any tea or coffee, unfortunately, to offer you, but we have conversation. So welcome, Omar.
Thank you very much.
And well, I was going to ask you how it was coming into CSM with all the flags and a large banner. I'm pleased that you did get into CSM eventually. What's it like walking in here when you see the big banner down there and numerous flags?
First, thank you very much for hosting me here. It's a great pleasure, especially, of course, seeing all the work that you have been doing around here and virtually, of course. But it's very nice to be physically present in the area and see the amount of work that is being done. And it's great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I just wondered if you could maybe start with giving an idea of how you became involved in the mosaic rooms and in particular the living room.
My involvement in the mosaic rooms is particularly in the part about the social aspect of the project of refugee heritage, which Alessandro Petty and Sandy Hillel has been working on for a few years. The project is about nominating the Dehesh refugee camp and as well as the 46 villages from where the people who are residing now, the refugees in the Dehesh refugee camp came from or were uprooted from. And their emphasis is on the history of the Dehesh refugee camp, because the Dehesh is like it's of course all the Palestinian refugee camps, at least like from my experience as somebody who grew up in one of them, in the Dehesh particularly. The refugees have developed a sort of unique socio-political fabric. And that's because, of course, of the absence of any government mandate and the need to organize themselves in different ways and be creative in how they do so. And so big part of the project of stateless and refugee heritage of Sandy and Alessandro is regarding the social spaces that exist in the Dehesh refugee camp. I attend to the Madafa space every Sunday, and from there we connect with friends and relatives and people in the Dehesh where we have a similar space. Basically, one of our friends decided to host Sunday's events there parallel to here, which has been great. And we've been engaged in many discussions there, and also with random people who come to the exhibition, and they end up in the mosaic rooms.
And of course that's how we met. A random person coming to the mosaic. It wasn't so random. I went a couple of times, and then And then you were in hot demand, I think, on a Sunday, and I was just drinking black coffee, and that's not a problem for me. And I waited my turn patiently, and then we opened up that discussion, and we've been talking probably for the last 4 or 6 weeks, and it's been... It's actually, it's run very nicely along with our own project here, and we've got to know each other and shared stories. And I wonder whether, how the concept of home has changed since you've been in London. I'm not sure, you've been in London for about 18 months, is that right? And so how the notion of that has changed, and being part of the Sunday living room, that possibly that's been a way into broadening your connections while you've been here as well.
Of course, that's a very, I think, great yet difficult question. I haven't really been thinking a lot about the notion of home while being here, but rather trying to maintain a constant connection with home. And I think it was in my, therefore, in my conscious, right? So I think the main sort of thing that changed, the main element that changed, is of course the physical presence. And to a great extent, I don't, there's no way to compensate on that. For the past, since 2013, and even since I was a little bit younger, you know, at age 13, 14, we go out to the street, to the camp, and we are asked to volunteer and to do things and to participate. And since 2013, I have been formally engaged with this Palestinian local organization. It's a youth center called Laylak. And from there, you know, I would attend to Laylak and be in the street with the people working on different initiatives and projects more than I stay at home. I worked in Laylak and other different organizations on multiple, and I think many projects, social work projects, community initiatives, for about 8 years before I come here. So when I came here, I maintained, of course, connection. I try as much as possible to maintain the connection and do something that is, you know, that's meaningful. And in this way, I think about here, not so whatever I do here, I try to make it reflect there, right? Because to me, that's important. And there are many, I've been working on different projects from here, one of which is the Mosaic Rooms, but other projects are more maybe educational. And of course, with the COVID situation, you know, there's less work that's being done there. The impact is severe, but you know. But yeah, I feel sort of slowly I am getting into that, you know, questioning exile more and more, right? Maybe not exile, questioning not being physically present. Home. What does that mean? What does it mean in terms of how much you can really give, and how much you can participate? Especially that our way in thinking in this local organization, Laylak, was that we worked for 8 years without fund, without writing proposals, without we have political stance against funds, right? It depends on local resources, on community resources, social community mobilization, which means that there is a significance to being physically present and go and speak to the people on a daily basis and get that sort of closeness. Not because you come, you know, with this gaze of, you know, you want to know, but it's rather, you know, living your normal life, but with more sort of awareness.
Thank you, and it's great to kind of when we set up this program, we really wanted to look into the more everyday and the roots and kind of what's on the ground and the stories that aren't being told, and you definitely give that a lot of richness. One of the topics is obviously ecology, and I was thinking about your work and your research and how that might reflect the ecology of Palestine somehow. And, you know, I'm talking also very much about the human ecology, and maybe you could sort of elaborate a little more there.
Thank you, yes. I have been thinking since the first time we corresponded about how to address this question, how to situate even your work, maybe, you know, within and connect it to what maybe not me but all of us we're doing in Palestine. And the way to do that, I thought I would maybe briefly tell you about a concept that we sort of admire and respect, and it's, you know, maybe one of the main, like, it's cornerstone, I think, in the Palestinian society, and this concept is called Auna. And Auna is an Arabic term that has its origins in the Arabic language. It comes from the term Ana, and Ara means helped, but in a more collaborative sense. Which means it's not responding to an emergency, right? Rather than, you know, a way of living. And Ona in the popular understanding of the term is this temporary single event where a group of people, you know, gather to do something or help somebody who's in need, and also not necessarily being in need as well. So if I am in the camp, let's say, take one example, if I want to build my house, and in the camps, the allies and the streets are very narrow, so, like, you don't have big cars like those who transport, you know, materials. They cannot get to my house. The neighbors, the relatives, the cousins, the people will just, instead of me doing it over a week and carrying, you know, the materials alone, they will just come and we do it in 1 hour, sometimes in, you know, one day, and that's done, right? So that's a very, very simple example, yet I think it's a single event, but behind which there is a specific, yet a bit complex history of solidarity and community organization. And one way to scale up the concept is to speak about, you know, how this concept is deeply rooted in the Palestinian social value system, but also the different political and social transformations that this concept or practice has went through so far. Which makes me think more politically, and if I may go a bit in history, when it's a concept that's rooted in the religion's beliefs, so it comes out from, you know, Christianity, from Islam, and I think Islam more in the Palestinian context. And it materializes in, after the 1920s, it started to take more of political dimension, right? So it's religious social principle before the 20s, but when the Zionist settlers started to immigrate and arrive to Palestine, and people started to sense that feel of threat, you know, to their resource and their living, they started to think how to react to this kind of threat collectively. between I think between 1875 to 1910, this period was full of religious missions from different European countries and Russia and elsewhere, and they established, you know, their philanthropic bases. You know, they help children, they help people in need, they have people with disabilities, and people in Palestine, individuals, started to see this more sort of institutionalized way of practice, and then they wanted to take the technique of institutionalizing the awana, right? Because the awana is there, the value is there, and with these missions and missionaries, they witnessed, you know, that there is more sort of institutionalized manner of doing and helping each other to maintain sustainability, because awana, when in its singular form, it doesn't maintain that sort of sustainability, right, on the long run. So they started to organize themselves. That's when, for example, in the early 90s, you have the women unions was established, the trade unions was established, and that was all on the awana basis, right, on the awana sort of principle. But later on, of course, with the, you know, I mean, before, I will jump into 1948, because that was, of course, a major date in this, because in 1948, before that, awana was used to help, you know, relieve poverty, maintain social fabric. People work in land together, they help each other. If a family finished before the other, they go help them, you know, until they finish. Which was much encouraged by, of course, religions, Palestine, as we said. But after the 1948, and with the you know, with the arrival, with the establishment of the Israeli state, or I think it's more with the uprootedness of the Palestinian refugees, the Nakba, there was this also responsibility, because awana, one part of the awana concept is feeling responsible toward others, right? So they started to gather, and like between 1948 to 1949, this is 1 year, and if you ask how people survived in 1 year, right, before the United Nations Relief and Work Agency was established, that's a year, and how did people survive in this 1 year? It's through that sort of mechanism, right? But the term has been has undergone a major shift, even in linguistically, and I will finish quickly, sorry. Even linguistically, when in 19, you know, towards the 70s, where, you know, and even during the Jordanian government in Palestine, during the 50s and 60s, people started to, you know, establish social charities, and charitable societies, and, you know, social work groups to respond to people's need, whether in the camps or elsewhere. And that was not necessarily based, like, done by political parties, right? Which was a problem to the, of course, to the Israeli occupation. And they tried as much as possible to stop that in Palestine, in the West Bank and in Gaza and elsewhere. I mean, inside Palestine speaking, right? Diaspora, that's, of course, another context, and there are other layers to that as well. But it was officially in 1970s where the term voluntarism took place, right? It was introduced through NGOs and through the arrival, you know, of registered, officially registered charitable societies and, you know, civil society. And it was then when the term as practice was institutionalized, but from the perspective of the donors, of the ones who are running these organizations, and not necessarily from the people, you know, sort of way of thinking and approaching and perceiving the concept. Which means it became to a stage where it's more of, you know, financial transactions were introduced to the term, right? So you volunteer and you take basically money, right? It's similar to the missionaries. Like you go, you help, but you take salary, and that's, you know, that's a totally different sort of approach. But the term has survived and still in there, still exists in Palestine, and it works together with voluntarism, right? And the way to maybe differentiate this is to, if I help my neighbor, that's auna. But if I go pick olive trees because the school asked us to come, that's voluntary work, right? And they, you know, overlap, and they inform each other. However, if the institution collapses, voluntary work will collapse, auna will not. And that's the sort of main difference. So what we are trying to do is to, and maybe in my own practice, I grew up with that concept. I grew up with this, you know, sense of collectivity, sense of belonging as well, and that's a major sense of it. And that's why I tend, I think, to the mosaic rooms. That's why I work on other projects. I will stop here because, sorry.
No, I, that's, you know, one of the reasons why you're here is because you talk so eloquently and you put it into a frame in which it's, I think that, especially the last few paragraphs, it makes it very easy for us to understand. And we're here as narrative environment students who work collaboratively, and you give a different perspective, and one I think that we can all kind of learn from. And really thank you for putting it in those words. And before we move over to your musical instrument that's leaning against the glass wall there, I wondered, there's another project that we haven't really spoken so much about, and that's your work with the Critical Practice Studio. Would you like to, we'll just spend a couple of minutes on that, and then we'll switch over to some music from yourself.
Thank you, of course. The CPS, the Critical Practice Studio, we named it in Arabic as Masha'a. And Masha'a is the, you know, usually translated as commons. You might, you know, some, when discussing it with a few friends, they translated the term as under commons, right? Speaking of Fred Moten. And the Critical Practice Studio is a project that brings together artists, community members, scholars, professionals, basically from, you know, all over, all the different sort of fields, together into a research residency that took place in Dehesha. And the idea actually was came after, you know, 1 year after the pandemic. When the pandemic started, I started to think, what is the, now that I can't, you know, work on projects with the people because, you know, there is all the lockdown and all the different situations. Me and a friend of mine, Jens Handler, a German professor who used to teach at Al-Quds Bard College, started to think how to bring community engagement into the academic sphere. And that's when we thought that we might be able to establish or to make a space for research residency for a duration of 2 weeks, which is still ongoing, and it was supported by the Open Society Network, and it was hosted by Al-Quds Bard College. And in this project, I participated, of course, since the beginning, and brainstorming it, and which aimed specifically on bringing that sort of common knowledge that is, you know, based on oral history from the refugee camps into the academic realm. And the project is about to finish in January, where all the participants will exhibit their sort of work and their in Berlin, from Palestine, but also internationally. We have participants who joined from Africa, from the United States, from Europe, also Syrians and Jordanians and Palestinians. Hopefully it will continue, but we'll see.
Thank you. And perhaps while you set up, I can just talk some more about, well, really the gratitude that we have for you to come along today. I know you're exceptionally busy, and it's very good that you can come and join us today. And perhaps this the end of this project that you just spoke about will give you some time to for yourself. We've got one microphone working. We're going to try to maybe put another one on there as well. No, let's go with that. Thank you.
much. That was beautiful. And it's been an absolute pleasure to get to know you over the last few weeks. Maybe a bit longer. So really appreciate you coming in and playing that. It ends a really nice segment for us.
Thank you. Thank you.